are you with Truth News Radio Australia, and it's the 16th of May 2013. My name's Hereward Fenton. Welcome to the show. Well, today I've got a couple of interesting stories to run through with you, one of them being one of our favourite subject areas, climate change, and another one being one of our favourite areas, vaccines and the government crackdowns and attempts to restrict people's freedoms therein. And I've got some news stories and a little bit of video that I'm going to be playing to you during today's show. I do hope you can stay with us for the hour. It should be interesting and hopefully give you some new insights and hopefully motivate you to get involved in some way. The main purpose of alternative media is it's not just a form of entertainment, as we see with mainstream news where you sit down and watch the TV and just blob out. The point about alternative media is that it's a way of bouncing ideas around, and it helps people get their thoughts together. And I've certainly gained so much from the things I've picked up. And what I often like to do is amplify the things that have come to me during the week, whether through Facebook or things I've browsed through quite often that have popped up through friends' networks and things. And this is actually how we communicate in this kind of globally aware internet reality that we're living in. It's quite amazing. It's quite powerful. And we are shaping history. We're changing things. We're making a difference. And I want to be talking more about that in the future too, how you can make a difference. And I had some interesting correspondence recently with one of my listeners who has said to me, and I'll be actually hoping to get him on, but you know, he was saying to me that something that I've often thought, and I think I've mentioned on this show, is that people are locked into this idea that they cannot change the world, that they're somehow just spectators. And this view, this mindset that you're just a spectator, is one of the most powerful tools of keeping you oppressed. And it's genius, really. Whoever thought it up, if it indeed was planned that way, that we should all consider ourselves to be merely spectators. But this idea in your mind that you're not actually really an actor, you're just in the audience, is something that you've got to remove, because it's completely false, it's completely disabling, it's completely anathema to what you need to be. You are an actor. Everyone is an actor. Every single human being on this planet is an actor. And as we awaken to that, as we become aware of that, the dynamic of our existence, the dynamic of our interactions in our world starts to change, and we realize it. Once you acknowledge it, then you start to see it, that you do indeed become an actor. Anyway, all interesting stuff. But now let me just read to you a story here from the Australian national news broadcaster, the ABC, from the 11th of May, Saturday the 11th of May. It says here, climate carbon pollution has hit its highest point in 3 million years. Now, you notice they use the word carbon pollution, and this is a phrase which really is a bit of a furphy. It's a bit of a twist of meanings. Of course, carbon is the building block of life. Carbon, hydrogen, and oxygen are the essential ingredients of life. So to talk about carbon pollution is as meaningless as like saying life pollution, or you could, you know, oxygen pollution. Actually, oxygen pollution would be worse. If there was too much oxygen, we would actually be poisoned by it. An excessive amount of oxygen is actually toxic, but guess what? Carbon dioxide in the atmosphere can go up by a factor of, I think, hundreds compared to what it is now. And guess what? It's still not dangerous to breathe. Whether it has an effect on the climate, that's another point. But it is certainly not toxic, dangerous, or a pollutant in any normal sense that we would use that word. But here's the headline there from the ABC. Carbon pollution hits the highest point in 3 million years. And of course, they don't even bother putting the word dioxide after carbon, because I think it's lazy editorial journalistic speak. You know, they've fallen into this convenient groove now of just using the word carbon on its own, which again is ludicrous, because because the climate change that we've been told exists does not exist because of carbon. It exists because of carbon dioxide. Very important point. Very important point to remember if you ever get into one of those debates with someone who's as ill-informed as many of these journalists. So just getting into the substance of the article now. It says here, global greenhouse gases in the atmosphere have reached an ominous milestone that is unprecedented in human history. The world's longest measure of carbon dioxide in the atmosphere has reached 400 parts per million for the first time in 3 million years. Right. Okay, let me just deconstruct that paragraph because it's got some furfies in it right up front. They're so right in your face, they're so obvious that you could easily miss them. It says here the world's longest measure of carbon dioxide in the atmosphere, and that, in the next paragraph you'll see, is actually Mauna Loa Observatory in Hawaii. Now, Mauna Loa Observatory in Hawaii has been going since, and it says here in the article, has actually been operating since 1958. And then it says data before that taken from ice core samples. Okay, so let's go back to the previous paragraph where it says the world's longest measure of carbon dioxide in the atmosphere has reached 400 parts per million for the first time in 3 million years. Okay. Well, it's longest measure of carbon dioxide in the atmosphere. Well, they're obviously not talking there about the Mauna Loa Observatory, are they? Uh-uh. Because that's only been going since 1958. That's only a little over 50 years, ladies and gentlemen. So the world's longest measure, they must be referring to the ice core samples. But then the ice core samples are a different way of measuring it to the Mauna Loa Observatory. And when they say the world's longest measure of carbon dioxide in the atmosphere, that actually is Mauna Loa because that is the longest measure of carbon dioxide in the atmosphere. Do you understand what I'm saying? In the atmosphere. Because they actually have an observatory that's on top of the mountain there, and they've got sensing equipment up there in the air right now, right? The ice core samples are inferred because they're actually taking bubbles of gas that are in ice, and they're saying, well, this was in the atmosphere millions of years ago. So the point I'm making, and it may seem like a finicky point, it may seem like I'm being overly pedantic, but I think not. I think the point is that the second paragraph here is completely duplicitous. I think it's wrong. I think it's deceitful. Because the world's longest measure of carbon dioxide, as measured by Mauna Loa Observatory, cannot tell us anything about the last 3 million years. Only the last 58 years of that 3 million years. I hope you follow what I'm saying. I hope it's as obvious to you as it is to me that that paragraph is a complete furphy. Anyway, let's continue. As it says here, the daily CO2 level is measured at Mauna Loa Observatory in Hawaii, which tracks greenhouse gases in the northern hemisphere. The level has been measured at Mauna Loa since 1958, with data before that taken from ice core samples. It says here, the last time it reached this level, temperatures rose by between 3 and 4 degrees, and sea levels were between 5 and 40 metres higher than today. Okay, I have to deconstruct that paragraph as well, I'm afraid. There's another furphy in there. The record, the ice core record, which has been widely referred to by many, many commentators, including climate skeptics, shows that there is actually a lag between temperature rise and CO2 increase. A lag, meaning that first the CO2 goes up, then the temperature goes up, right? An increase in CO2 leads to an increase. Sorry, I had that the wrong way round. I've actually got confused myself. Let me start again. The there is a lag between CO2 increase and temperature increase, meaning that when temperature goes up, carbon dioxide goes up later. Let's just let that sink in. Carbon dioxide increases as a result of temperature rise. It is not a cause of temperature rise, at least according to the records we've got from the ice core samples. And this is not controversial. This is not disputed. This is factual, ladies and gentlemen. But unfortunately, very sadly, that the dishonest media, the representation of this, the dishonest journalists who put these types of stories together continue to wire up the logic wrongly and give you a false picture, saying, oh, yes, the CO2 increased the temperature. The evidence, the same evidence that they're referring to from the ice core samples, says that temperature increase drives CO2 increase. Now, some scientists have countered that by saying there is some complex little feedback mechanism that occurs between temperature increases and CO2 increases, but that is very, very complex and not clear and not straightforward if it is indeed true. It is not the prima facie evidence, ladies and gentlemen. It is not the prima facie evidence, which is undisputed, that temperature rise precedes carbon dioxide increases. So again, we're just deconstructing here this seemingly straightforward article and discovering that it has all kinds of deceptions and misinformation and slight twistings of the truth in it. But you'd read it as a layperson and you just think, well, it's very clear, isn't it? Now, it says here that the rise in greenhouse gases corresponds with the extra carbon dioxide known to have been emitted by humans through fossil fuels and clearing forests. So the rise in greenhouse gases corresponds with the extra carbon dioxide known to have been emitted by humans through fossil fuels and clearing forests. Well, that again, ladies and gentlemen, is not as clear as you might think. And there are certainly different schools of thought on that particular subject, because the amount of carbon dioxide in the atmosphere varies tremendously. I mean, every year it goes through an incredible cycle from summer to winter. And of course, the oceans provide a huge sink for carbon dioxide. But then, of course, other natural processes like volcanoes produce fantastic amounts of carbon dioxide. And this really has nothing to do with human intervention. We're just going to break. I'll be continuing with this fascinating story when we come back here with Truth News Radio Australia. Don't go away.
Are you getting fed up with all the disinformation, deception, spin, propaganda, half-truths and downright lies in mainstream news? Looking for something different? Visit Truth News Radio Australia, www.truthnews.com.au, and may the truth set you free.
Like they want us to be afraid, man. Or maybe we just like being afraid. Maybe we just so used to it at this point that it's just a part of us, part of our culture. Security alert on orange. It's been on orange since 01, G. I mean, what's up, man? Can a brother get yellow, man? Just for like 2 months or something? Goddamn. Sick of that. Mic check.
the groove is thick, so I'ma rhyme like a lunatic. I do this shit with an unassuming wit. The corporation conjured up the bass and the tempo. My name is Liv, that's the intro, now let's go. The flow of life throwing strife into the mix to the pink dark.
Hi, welcome back, you're with Truth News Radio. It's great to have you company today. Oh, the show has been going for a few years now, and we try to present information from around the world, focusing to a large extent on Australia, but looking at global issues. But quite often, some of the global issues that we've got are amplified in the Australian news. And I think in some ways, a small country like Australia, which is very much tapped into the international globalist cartels, the New World Order, for want of a better term, is often a kind of a prism to look at what's going on in the world. You see the news here really focused on the main narratives of the globe, which are indeed so far away from Australia, and yet it becomes the central kind of theme of the news. I mean, we're constantly bombarded with stories about what's happening in North Korea and Syria and what America's up to. And, you know, of course, those are all important, but countries that aren't sort of part of an empire like that don't tend to give all of that far-flung external information so much importance as we do in Australia. I think it is because we really very much are a colony of the empire. It used to be the British Empire. It's now this new globalist, New World Order empire, which I do believe is very real. And I believe that they control pretty much a large number of countries. There are some countries they control more than others. And of course, they always want to increase their control. That is the essence of an empire. They want to control more and more. And if they could, they would certainly take over many parts of the world. But they influence where they can't take over. And I think it's sometimes that the way that empire works is it's somewhat on the threshold there between direct control and influence. But then those two things merge into each other, because with influence, you can end up getting people into seats of power who are pretty much paid operatives of the central command. And, of course, the issue of climate change, which we've been talking about here in the previous segment, is classic there, because Australia has apparently led the world in climate change legislation, whereas, in fact, you know, we have a population which is barely 25 million in a planet with about 8 billion or so in it. And yet here we are leading the world as if that has any significance. It's like a drop in the ocean, right? But what it tells you is that Australia is kind of a microcosm of something that that these players, these controllers, is doing in the world. And that's why Australia can be a very challenging place to live if you're someone who's a little bit more aware. And the amount of propaganda, the amount of rank propaganda, just complete travesties of truth that we get in the media is quite just breathtaking, actually. And this article here I've been reading to you from today is certainly no exception to that. Of course, the title, as I said there before, was Carbon Pollution Hits Highest Point in 3 Million Years. I mean, incredibly loaded statement there, and the whole thing, every paragraph is just loaded with furfies. Now, the article goes on here to a quote from the Climate Institute chief executive. Yes, we have a Climate Institute in Australia, government funded. We actually have a minister for climate change in the government. We have a Department of Climate Change. We've got a Climate Institute. And these organisations chew up fantastic amounts of the public purse. I mean, the average salaries of the people in these institutions is something like $180,000 a year. This was recently exposed. It's a giant industry. It's a giant Orwellian industry of manipulating reality. Essentially, that's what it is. Remember, they use computer models as their main source of data. So if that's not a form of manipulating reality, I don't know what is. Now, it says here, Climate Institute Chief Executive John Connor says that greenhouse gas concentrations have increased by about 40% since the Industrial Revolution. So there's a clear trend and a dangerous trend in carbon pollution. Mr. Connor says the worrying trend puts the planet on a path towards dangerous climate change. Notice he says on a path towards, on a path towards. So is it climate changing or not? Again, we're being, it's a bit of a mystery there, isn't it? Just it's another way of using words to confuse you. This matters, and this is a direct quote, this matters because the extra heat is loading the dice for even more dangerous weather extremes and climate risk. We've already seen a lot of those with a warming of around 1 degree warming of average levels. I think that's a typo there in the article. I think they actually mean 1 degree warming over average levels. And if I might just clarify what that really means, is that means the average level, well, in fact, hang on, wait a second. That is actually a complete misappropriation of the normal information, the way it's normally expressed. Normally they talk about the average level, and they've picked a period of time between 1960 and 1990, arbitrarily, they've chosen that as the measure, right? As the benchmark for the measurement. And when they talk about deviations, they talk about deviations from the average of that period. But here they're not referring to that. They're just saying 1 degree of warming of average levels. I don't think that means anything. I mean, it may be a typo, but look, this is the Australian national media hub here. They've got hundreds of people on staff to be able to check their copy when they put anything on a web page. And if they can't actually put something down that is actually grammatically correct to start off with, then it has no meaning. I'm sorry if I'm belaboring the point here too much, but I'll just read to you that statement again. It says, we've already seen a lot of those with a warming of around 1 degree warming of average levels. Well, it should be not of, but over, right? But then what does he mean by average levels? Average levels of what? The scientific sources, the mainstream sources, the most extreme have said 0.75 over the last century. I've seen that, right? I've not seen 1 degree, and it certainly can't be 1 degree over average levels. That would mean one, because the average levels, as I said, has typically been used by the IPCC referring to the period 1960 to 1990. It cannot be 1 degree since then. It cannot be. So, interesting point here is that this is supposed to be a direct quote. It actually has quotation marks around it, and yet it seems to be absolute gibberish. So either they've misquoted poor old Mr. Connor, or Mr. Connor can't even speak English properly. It goes on to say here, we're heading towards 2 to 3 and 4. 2 to 3 and 4. We're heading towards 2 to 3 and 4. And if that's just meaningless drivel, ladies and gentlemen. Again, I'm reading you a direct quote from the chief executive, who's probably on a salary of $300,000 or $400,000. Maybe I'm being too conservative there. It might be higher. I'd say it's at least $300,000, and he can't even speak English properly. Oh, it's frustrating. It's frustrating. When we come back from the break, I'm actually going to deconstruct this idea that CO2 is higher than it's ever been before in human history. What does that really mean, and is it true? Going to break. We'll be right back. Stay with us.
is so unjust. Children, yeah, I don't know who to trust. Your worst enemy could be your best friend, and your best friend your worst enemy.
Hi, welcome back. You're with Truth News Radio. Great to have your company today. Do check us out at www.truthnews.com.au, and you can download our podcasts, you can subscribe to them. In fact, if you get on your smartphone and you do a search on RSS feeds, podcast feeds for Truth News Radio, you should be able to get them automatically downloading to your smartphone or also in iTunes. And if you'd like to listen to the live stream of the show, you can do that. You can actually go to our website. You can go to truthnews.com.au and click on the Listen Live option, and you'll see there some links where you can get the live feed. Now, today's show is actually not going out live. We've had a little bit of a problem with getting a producer for the show. We've had a producer on the show previously, Chris Emery, who was doing a fantastic job, but he has now become extremely busy with his filmmaking activities. And unfortunately, the show does not currently have a producer. Now, that's actually very important because we can't do a live show without a producer. The producer actually has to answer the phone, has to field calls. It's something that the presenter cannot do for obvious reasons. So unfortunately, until we can source a producer, these shows are actually only going out in a pre-recorded format. And I would love to get back to doing live shows, ladies and gentlemen. I find it much more inspiring, and it gets my adrenaline up too. I really enjoy it because you really have to be on the ball. But hopefully we'll have that sorted out soon. But if anyone out there listening would be interested in being a producer for the show, please get in touch with me. Editor@truthnews.com.au is my email, and you can find all that on the website. And we'll talk to you, and we'll get you in touch with Deborah from Logos Radio Network, who manages the actual live stream. And you'll have to learn a little bit about some of the software interfaces that are used in the production environment. But they're pretty straightforward if you've got some IT knowledge. And of course, I'm also looking for someone to help me with the other aspect of a producer's role, which is in fact contacting guests, organizing times, locking in dates, and just basically liaising with potential guests for the show. If you're interested in doing that, I will work with you. I will give you every support I can, short of paying you. Unfortunately, this show comes out of my own pocket, and I do not have the resources to pay anyone. But if you are interested, I would certainly love to talk to you about being a full producer of this show and helping us get some really good guests on the show and a good lineup, a good future sort of projected lineup of guests, which I think would give our listeners more than what they're currently getting, because I'm a little bit limited in my ability to do all that with some other commitments that I have. Anyway, just returning to our subject here from the previous break about climate change, we were reading the article here that was saying that that carbon pollution has reached its highest level in 3 million years, implying that 3 million years ago carbon pollution was really high. And you sort of wonder, well, was it aliens, or I mean, who was doing the bad stuff back then? Oh, well, it was just actually, that's the planet. Planet's been going through some different phases, ladies and gentlemen. And indeed, look, the planet has had incredible variations in CO2 levels by factors of hundreds or more. I mean, back in the Jurassic, I can't remember the exact geological eras there, but around about 200 million, 300 million years ago, the carbon dioxide levels were astronomically higher than they are now. And, you know, at that time, the Earth was covered with forests. I believe the Carboniferous period is another period during that time. And it's called Carboniferous for a reason. The planet was completely covered in thick forests, in tropical jungles, conifer forests in the northern and southern hemispheres, just vegetation up the wazoo. I mean, it was just incredible. And you know what? With a high CO2 concentration in the atmosphere, that's what tends to happen. It's exactly the greenhouse effect. And I mean the real greenhouse effect, not the one that they talk about the earth getting hot. The true greenhouse effect, and the real meaning of that word, is that it makes plants go crazy. Plants love it. Plants suck it up because it's food. CO2 makes plants go crazy. So if we had a massively high CO2 content, guess what? We would have an incredibly lush planet, ladies and gentlemen. A lot of the deserts would probably disappear. And, you know, it really saddens me that no one even talks about this. I mean, even the skeptics, like a lot of people just don't have time to get into all the sides of this that are really important. But a CO2-rich environment could, in fact, be the best thing we could have. It could be so fantastic. There are different schools of thought on this, ladies and gentlemen. The idea that a CO2-rich environment is definitely a terrible death knell for living things on this planet is... I mean, look at those ancient periods. Look at how the planet was covered in forests. Is that so terrible? Would it be so terrible if the entire Earth were covered in lush forests and tropical jungles? Anyway, I'd like to just... attempt to deconstruct another side of this, which is the idea that CO2 levels have been stable for so long and then suddenly shot up in the last 100 years or so. That is the idea being projected by the touts of the IPCC, right? And it is based on a very limited set of measurements. It is based on the Mauna Loa Observatory, which only goes back to 1958, and it is based on the ice core samples, right? But guess what? There are a whole lot of other ways of measuring CO2 in the atmosphere. Now, I've got an interesting article here titled "The IPCC's CO2 Trick." And it says here, and this is from a website titled Philosophical Investigations. I don't know the exact name of the author. But it says here that one of the IPCC's tricks, well hidden and buried under mountains of energy department paid trivia publicized by the likes of The Guardian and Real Climate, is the ludicrous claim that CO2 levels have been historically stable and are now exceptionally high, leading to a runaway greenhouse warming effect. But this appears to be yet another one of the deceptions that has been foisted upon us by the so-called experts and so-called impartial scientists that are truly, in fact, political representatives of the government-funded institutions around the world. In fact, the claim that CO2 levels were stable is really based on a very limited way of doing the measurement. Now, the webpage I'm referring to here quotes from a paper by Ernst George Beck, which refers to more than 90,000 accurate chemical analyses of CO2 that were done since 1812. And this analysis produces a very different picture to what we see from the IPCC. He says in the paper here, since 1812, the CO2 concentration in northern hemispheric air has fluctuated, exhibiting three high-level maxima around 1825, 1857, and 1942, the latter showing more than 400 ppm. PPM, of course, means parts per million, and 400 ppm is apparently a very alarming figure, which is the figure that was referred to in the previous article I was reading from there. And the climate experts there from the Australian Climate Institute said that we've never been anywhere near that in 3 million years. Now, looking at the paper here from Ernst George Beck, There is actually a graph, and we can see that from the measurements that he's referring to, it looks like the level of carbon dioxide reached 540 ppm around 1820. It then declined significantly, and by about 1870 was at 330 ppm, sorry, 310 ppm. And it gradually climbed over the 19th century and reached another peak of around 420 in about 1945, and then declined again somewhat. You're with Truth News Radio Australia. Do stay with us. We'll be right back after this break. Welcome back, you're with Truth News Radio. And I've been talking here about climate change and carbon dioxide levels, and really interesting paper there that I was referring to, which disputes the IPCC's claims about CO2 levels. And this is one of the actual linchpins of climate science. It's really important to look at. I'm not saying that it's proven, but I'm saying that there is a different viewpoint here that's certainly been published and scientifically based. Solid measurements there, and it turns out, if you read this article, it turns out that the IPCC rejected most of these other forms of measurement. The only forms of measurement that the IPCC researchers accepted was the ones that they that I referred to there in the previous segment, from the Mauna Loa Observatory and from the ice core samples. And I'll just continue to read to you here from the article. The science of CO2 measurements has been greatly influenced by the measurements taken by a steam engineer and amateur meteorologist called G.S. Callender. For climate alarmists, Callender is the father of anthropogenic global warming theory. And he certainly influenced Charles Keeling, the American whose pronouncements on the subject are taken as gospel by the IPCC. Callender analysed just one set of data on atmospheric CO2 content taken at Kew and near London between 1898 and 1900. These data were taken near a source of CO2 and were analytically very uncertain. From this analysis, he concluded that at around 1900, the free atmosphere over the North Atlantic region contained approximately 274 plus or minus 5 parts per million of CO2. Now, the important thing to bear in mind in all of this is that these figures that this chap Callender came up with became enshrined in the law of the IPCC. The figure of around the high 200s, around about 300 ppm, as being somehow the ideal figure for what CO2 levels should be, is based on these measurements. And it's an arbitrary point in time, an arbitrary measurement that was made. But later on, when the IPCC came along and started using ice core samples and the observations at Mauna Loa Observatory, everything was kind of compared to this benchmark. And any other sources of measurement that did not adhere or did not confirm the idea that that this 280 figure roughly was a long-term stable figure, they were rejected, right? So a lot of the other data that we had and the chemical analyses that had been done showed significant variations in CO2 levels over relatively short periods of time. Well, these sources of data were rejected. They were just said, no, they're not valid. The only things that we're going to consider valid are these ones, and these ones conform to what Callender originally determined, and they show an increasing level of CO2. But of course, at Mauna Loa, it's only measured from 1958. Very short time frame indeed. But some of the other chemical analyses show that it spiked well over 500 back in the 19th century. But the IPCC will tell you that's rubbish. That's rubbish data. And then they'll refer to their ice core samples, but the ice core samples are one source of data indeed. And one day I'm going to get into this show and really analyze the ice core samples and how they've been done and what they really tell us. I don't really have time to get into that in any more detail today. I want to play to you now a short audio clip by Stefan Molyneux, who I played some stuff from you a couple of weeks ago. And this time talking about climate change, and he makes some really important, concise statements here about the sceptical position on climate change, and he refers to Australian scientist David Evans, married to Joanne Nova, who runs the highly successful blog joanova.com.au. And David Evans is a really credible, solid scientific person with a very strong background in actually mathematics, and he has worked for the Australian Department of Climate Change until he himself became a skeptic. And he has summarized very clearly and very methodically and very conservatively what climate skepticism is really based on. And I'm going to play to you this clip from Stefan Molyneux, which will probably take us through to the end of the hour today.
The Skeptic's Case by Dr. David M.W. Evans. We check the main predictions of the climate models against the best and latest data. Every serious skeptical scientist has been consistently saying essentially the same thing for over 20 years, yet most people have never heard the message. Here it is, put simply enough for any lay reader willing to pay attention. What the government climate scientists say. The direct effect of CO2 is well-established physics, based on laboratory results and known for over a century. Feedbacks are due to the ways the Earth reacts to the direct warming effect of the CO2. The threefold amplification by feedbacks is based on the assumption, or guess, made around 1980, that more warming due to CO2 will cause more evaporation from the oceans, and that this extra water vapor will in turn lead to even more heat trapping, because water vapor is the main greenhouse gas. And extra heat will cause even more evaporation, and so on. This amplification is built into all the climate models. The amount of amplification is estimated by assuming that nearly all the industrial age warming is due to our CO2. The government climate scientists and the media often tell us about the direct effect of the CO2, but rarely admit that two-thirds of their projected temperature increases are due to amplification by feedbacks. What the skeptics say. The serious skeptical scientists have always agreed with the government climate scientists about the direct effect of CO2. The argument is entirely about the feedbacks. The feedbacks dampen or reduce the direct effect of the extra CO2, cutting it roughly in half. The main feedbacks involve evaporation, water vapor, and clouds. In particular, water vapor condenses into clouds, so extra water vapor due to the direct warming effect of extra CO2 will cause extra clouds, which reflect sunlight back out into space and cool the Earth, thereby reducing the overall warming. There are, literally, thousands of feedbacks, each of which either reinforces or opposes the direct warming effect of the extra CO2. Almost every long-lived system is governed by net feedback that dampens its response to a perturbation. If a system instead reacts to a perturbation by amplifying it, the system is likely to reach a tipping point and become unstable, like the electronic squeal that erupts when a microphone gets too close to its speakers. The Earth's climate is long-lived and stable. It has never gone into runaway greenhouse, unlike Venus. which strongly suggests that the feedbacks dampen temperature perturbations, such as that from extra CO2.
Now, I'm just going to leave it there because I think that statement actually really summarizes it very clearly and simply enough for, I think, anyone to understand. The essence of the IPCC climate change argument is that there is a feedback mechanism occurring on planet Earth, that this heating of the this increase of water vapor will cause further temperature increase, which will actually magnify the temperature increase through the water vapor. Now, if there were a runaway feedback effect, the entire climate would be unstable, wouldn't it? And yet it's not. We've seen that climate is relatively stable. It fluctuates. Temperatures fluctuate, but it doesn't have runaway effects. There is something essentially wrong with the core feedback theory that is the linchpin, really, of climate science. Now, before we end the show today, I'd actually like to just briefly run through you, as I mentioned at the beginning of the show, some recent news in regard to the war on vaccine dissidents. There is a new campaign called the No Play, No Jab campaign. Sorry, I've said it the wrong way around. I'm a little bit dyslexic. I often get things the wrong way around. It's actually No Jab and No Play. And dumbed down talk for dumbed down people. What does that mean? Well, the idea is that parents who don't get their kids jabbed, lovely terminology, isn't it? Don't get their kids jabbed, won't be allowed to take them to childcare centres. And it's incredibly nasty. It's actually just, look, it's the lobby groups of the big pharmaceutical organisations angry that a lot of people are waking up to the dangers of vaccines. They've seen all the evidence. They know that, you know, they've actually seen it. They know people whose kids have become autistic, who've had incredibly horrible reactions, seizures. And they know there's a problem here. So a lot of people are not getting vaccinated like they used to. The levels are still very high. I mean, levels are still way over 90% on average. Still very, very high. But the evil, demonic people who are running the big organizations that are supposedly to care for our health aren't happy with that. They're just not happy with anyone basically waking up to the truth. So they're trying to clamp down on it. And the leader of the opposition, Tony Abbott, has said that he will crack down on people who choose not to vaccinate their kids by supporting child centres' rights to turn away children who are not immunised and by reviewing family benefit payments to vaccine refusers. Now, governments of both the left and the right have attempted to demonise parents who don't want to vaccinate their kids. They've threatened to take away the family benefit, but in fact, they can't. It's just sort of unconstitutional. People just have to fill out a form and say they're a conscientious objector, and they can still get the family benefit. But that's just a little tidbit for you. We'll be covering that more, hopefully, in the next show. Hour 2 of today's show will be a replay. Not able to do 2 hours this week, but I will be back next week with another show. I do hope you enjoyed today. It's been great talking to you. Harold Fenton for Truth News Radio, signing out. See you next week.